know, maybe just being joined by Patricia Rowe, a recently elected councillor for the Social Democrats. You're very welcome in the AIR FM.
Thank you very much, Austin. Lovely to be here. First time.
Mm-hmm. Now, while you're here, we might as well ask the question.
Yes.
Why on earth did you want to become a councillor?
That's a $64 million question, Austin. I didn't really want to become a councillor originally. I joined the party because, firstly, I very much admired Roisin Shortall, who was my local TD. And I was after made redundant in work and a little bit of time. And I decided after following politics for years, I decided to join a political party. And so I joined Social Democrats. And about a year and a half later, I ended up being nominated as a...
And then of course, the campaigning started and the knocking on doors and et cetera.
Yeah, I found it... I didn't like knocking on doors, really. I'll have to admit that. And I think any politician... I don't consider myself a politician, but I suppose I'll have to include myself a little bit in that. Anybody who says they do enjoy knocking on doors, I really don't believe them. You go around in the evening time and people are only in from work or they're just having their dinner or they're just about to sit down and watch their favourite TV programme and the next thing, ding-dong, and they have this person on the door. I want to speak to them. So a lot of people nowadays don't bother answering their doors, fair enough. And a lot of people, I notice a new thing on me, don't have doorbells. Yeah, that was new on me. Yeah. So you weren't kind of, what would you say, you weren't hurt by the lack of answer because there was no way of getting an answer, so unless you had their phone number. But I did enjoy canvassing from the point of view of speaking to people. And I was just thinking as I was driving over here today is that the amount of one thing that struck me about our area, about Beaumont, Whitehall and Santrine and around kind of Lorcal area was kind of an age profile of people and the number of people who appear to be living on their own. That struck me.
Yeah, and that is a feature of the area, the general area, you know. And of course that brings about lots of concerns with regard to all sorts of things with regard to senior citizens, which we call this program, which is to mostly concerned with senior citizens, but they don't have to be senior citizens. But, you know, as an age profile in Ireland, people are getting older.
That's right.
Yeah. And that will require, to some extent, resources, you know.
That's very true.
And... the city council, of course, and the councillor has to be all things to all people. From fixing cracks in footpaths, so it's providing all sorts of assistance and grants, etc. You know.
Yes, I think Dublin City Council are quite good at reaching out to older people, and there's a lot of programmes happen, and I think they work in conjunction with other bodies to, as I say, reach out to people and to try and involve older people. And I think there's probably not another word for it, but when we say older people,
call them senior citizens.
Senior citizens, yeah. Well, people think of somebody who's maybe not able to get out and about much. But as we all know, and yourself is a great example, Austin, I think we were talking on the phone, we were saying it's 20-odd years ago we first came across each other when we were involved with going to meetings about Dublin Port Tunnel.
And
that was being suggested. Took a few years out of our lives.
There was light at the end of the tunnel.
We didn't think so.
We didn't. But the point I was going to make was that senior citizens encompasses such a wide variety of people and a wide variety of ages. And I think from that new card that Dublin City Council have for over 55s, and because people sometimes are retiring maybe a bit earlier through their own wish or not, and are active and are healthier for a lot longer, and because we are a very fast-growing demographic, I think it's something that planners, particularly, kind of my little bugbear, have to be cognizant of and have to think about. It's not all about newlyweds and with young children. It's about older people and their needs as well.
Well, the young children become older people eventually. So it's going to concern everybody. But the with regard to the council, you know, there's all sorts of meetings and discussions, and you can get very frustrated, you know. And we saw the last council meeting at Theo Devaney Gardens. There was a big kerfuffle in the council chamber. But I haven't seen that in donkey's years.
No, it was a big kerfuffle, as you put it. I don't know if people are aware of what happened. It was quite daunting, one might say, and off-putting in another sense. And a fellow councillor of mine mentioned at a meeting we had there the weekend, or get together after being out canvassing, was that she found it not the best, that while protesters were in the chamber and were shouting at the top of their voices and there was uproar going on, that an actual vote was taken.
Yeah, I'm seeing it on the webcast.
And that maybe wasn't the best circumstances to take a vote. There's freedom of speech, and I was thinking about this since then. I remember going on protest marches when I was younger. I think the very first one I ever went on was for Wood Quay. It seems a long time ago.
Been there, done that, not doing it anymore.
And funnily enough, that's where now I go to a lot of meetings. And I think it's kind of quite ironic in a sense that Dublin City Council have these beautiful offices. Unfortunately, at the time, none of us were in favour of building on that particular site. And they could have found another site, I felt.
That's going to happen. But that's history.
That's history.
That's history.
So the people who were protesting outside had every right to do so, because, I mean, one of our dearest rights is freedom of speech. I just have a question mark maybe about the fact that the people who were in the chamber... they're invited in there by a councillor. You can't get into a Dublin City Council meeting.
You have to have a bit of paper.
Unless you have the little chit of paper, yes, and that you're signed in. And if you are signed in to sit in on a meeting, and because there's so little space, which I think probably comes a lot of surprise to a lot of people.
There's only about 15 seats in the gallery, maybe 20.
Yeah, at most.
Yeah,
at most. But those people can make a lot of noise if they choose to do so. And then also you had a lot of people outside. But I think it's kind of incumbent on those people to maybe just maybe let councillors speak and let people be heard.
Let debate continue.
Yes, and because debate is part of free speech as well. And what happened was towards the end of the meeting is that people in the public gallery stood up and started shouting and then started walking up and down, holding their phones in the air. Presumably they were filming. And... so it was the end of the debate. I didn't think that was appropriate.
More or less once off. Like I say, I haven't seen that at the City Council for donkey's years, you know. And normally it's quite conservative, you know, when you get the 3 minutes to speak and the Lord Mayor will cut you off very quickly.
It is amazing, though, in this technological age that there isn't some system where you can have, if people are in an area, that you can't switch off the sound. Or, you know, I know now it's probably an open thing. I haven't been in the chamber in a long time, you know. But you think that there would be, and even to stop phones, you know, you can't bring your phone in. Or, you know what I mean? There should be some way of doing that.
You can be switched off the sound if you are a speaker.
You can't.
When your 3 minutes is up, it's up.
But as you say, that doesn't happen very often, and it's my first experience of it. And people want to make their voices
maybe
heard.
Let's hope it'll be your last.
I say that won't happen.
Just when you mentioned about it's a very small area, at the very first meeting, because I think. When I spoke to you there last week and you asked me to come along here, and thank you very much for the opportunity to do that.
That's what we're here for.
I just thought about, and you said just to speak about becoming a councillor, and as I say, coming over here, I was just thinking about the very first meeting I attended, and I asked my husband and my daughter to come along because it's a very proud day, and it's very kind of exciting. And I was kind of disappointed then when I realised that they wouldn't actually be able to be in the chamber. So they had to sit outside. Now, they watched it on the CCTV, but they didn't actually see me because the CCTV was pointed up towards the Lord Mayor and the officials. So they didn't get to see any of that. So, yeah, that was... I mean, I have been there years ago when... I've always been a member of my own resident association, so I know we were in there years and years ago for something, but I'd forgotten actually how small that little area is. Yeah, and that was, just to speak about that, it was such a proud day, and I got my photograph taken beside Daniel O'Connell's statue in the round room because I'm a great admirer of Daniel O'Connell, and I just was really sorry my mum and dad weren't there. And I think on those kind of days, you'd say, my mum was from Cavan. But my dad did her a favour, as he always said, and married a culture. But dad was always proud to be from Dublin, and it was a very proud day for myself, my family, and yeah, you kind of think of them on those occasions.
And did you get the uniform?
No.
No, you didn't get the cloak.
No.
The big wig, the big hat and all that.
No, I didn't.
Which they used to give them out years ago. And
that's
on state occasions, they'd all turn up.
I think maybe, I don't know if they've done away with that completely. But
well, I haven't seen it in donkey's ears.
No, and I think that sometimes all those kind of official outfits make people think that, you're kind of sort of a step away from ordinary people. But, like, I don't think so. And I think the majority of councillors, and particularly this time, I think there's a lot of first-time councillors. Mm-hmm. And we aren't people who are, you know that word they use, career politicians? Mm-hmm. A lot of people, I think, are first-time kind of being elected are people who come from, like myself, just kind of local community backgrounds. Mm-hmm. And so, therefore, I think the whole pomp and ceremony thing maybe... is best left to one side.
Mm. And, at least the Lord Mayor wears the chain and it's about ton weight.
Yeah.
It really is.
No,
yeah.
I think it's great, though, in a way, that most of the councillors are coming from the real world, so to speak. You know, I'm not shooting down. There probably were councillors who were good and were from these political families. But I think in the modern world we live in now, you're better off having people who are in... ordinary, can I say?
Yes.
You know, come on, and you know what the local woman of the house or the career girl or the family are doing, and the local footpaths and the bus
problems that your experience and
you're
experiencing them too.
Yes, yeah, I agree with that. Just one little piece of history just come into my head, and this isn't blowing my own trumpet, but I was told afterwards that I would be entitled to. If they hadn't done away with this title, to use the title Alderman. Now, I don't know if they would change it to Alderperson.
It would be Alderman.
Alderman, because it's that's reserved for the first person who gets elected on the first count in the city of Dublin. And somebody pointed out, and I was just delighted because I often heard my dad talking about Alfie Byrne. The famous Alfie Byrne. And as a friend of mine said, he used to walk out on Croke Park and somebody wit would say, oh, they must have cut the grass. Why? Because you can see Alfie Byrne. I was thinking he was a bit on the short side, I think. But yeah, so that was a little link to history. And history.
And when he was elected, was it 16 times?
Yeah, yeah.
15 or 16.
Yeah,
no, that was 15 or 16 years.
Yeah. Yes, he was a famous councillor.
Yeah. He must have been the longest councillor ever, was he, that was elected?
I'm not sure.
He was definitely the most times elected Lord Mayor. I think. And I think we have a great history in Dublin of, just to tell you about and just a little bit about what the nice part about being on the council is, maybe being invited to functions and something that you would normally maybe not get to go to. So this morning I was at the announcement of the long list of the Dublin Literary Awards. So it was held over in...
I think I missed that one.
It was held over in...
That's officially not out yet.
Okay. It was held in over in the library in Pierce Street.
Yeah.
And it was... the Lord Mayor couldn't be there, so was one of the other councillors stood in for him. And the judges were there, and the judges are from very east of Limerick, so a Catalan judge, another Danish judge, several, six judges. And it was lovely to be there, but I just thought the opening speech mentioned that if you walk outside of the library, that if you walk down, turn to the right, within it's here at Hollis Street Hospital. Mm-hmm. And he remembered, and where generations of Dublin people and people from around have been born, but that it was mentioned in Ulysses, and a certain part of Ulysses was based there. And then also that you had Silicon Docks just 10 minutes also down the road. Mm-hmm. And just kind of that Dublin relates back to old Dublin and then to new Dublin. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of all part of what we have within the literary awards.
Yeah.
That we reach back in time when we open a book, that we look back in time maybe in history and find mm-hmm. out about our own city or country or other places. And then also that we've a link into all over the world, because those 157 books are nominated from, I think it's 41 mm-hmm. different mm-hmm. countries.
Wow.
Mm. Yeah, and that we're the UNESCO City of Literature, and I'm kind of very proud of that. Yes, I think all Dublin people should be.
Yeah.
Yes, yes, yeah. It's lovely.
And James Joyce walked down there in 04, right? And he was talking to the doctors, right? And they were all saying, it's diet and quiet these people need.
Diet and quiet. That was in Hollis Street.
But we're going to move now to Ellenfield, of course. If it ever happens, but
well, you could say not only in Hollis Street, but if you're talking about in 1904, and you think of the condition a majority of Dublin people lived in then, so the tenements were, if you think, between the two canals, and I've done some, well, I did some projects on that myself.
Quite a lot of the councils owned those.
Unfortunately, it doesn't get mentioned, but diet and quiet would be something that people could have done with who weren't just in Hollis Street Hospital. Yeah.
But that's just beside the point. Mm. Yeah. Mm. Now, what do you hope to do as a councillor? Like, you know, there's a whole lot of projects and everybody needs everything, and they're going to be knocking on, you won't be knocking on their doors, but they'll be knocking on yours. There's a big pothole and Mrs. Finn and so-and-so fell down it, and etc. And
yeah, there's several things. Well, it's a very broad thing to say. You'd like to be representative of people and for mm-hmm. people, and I suppose all councillors say that and do that. But well, maybe not everybody carries it out, because sometimes I feel councillors are taken up maybe with a lot more kind of political mm-hmm. matters and maybe matters on a broader scale outside of their mm-hmm. own area. I'm very much focused on my local area. The reason I got elected, I put it down to, is that I work with Roisin Shortall, and that's how people knew my name, or one of the main reasons why they gave me a vote. And I think she's a very well respected TD for this area, particularly in the end of the constituents here around Lorcan, Santry, Whitehall and Beaumont. She's well known and well respected, and I mean, she's represented this area well for the last good number of years. Is it 25 years, I think, she can?
Yeah, well, she was a councillor before that. And actually, now you mentioned the Dublin Power Tunnel, right? And she was the woman that kept after the cities. There were city managers then, after the city manager, to keep extending, because we wanted to extend it up to the tail end of the constituency, which we've got. But Roisin played a big part in that, I can tell you.
Yes, she's been very active from back in those days, which is how she's came to my notice. And also because I was involved in my own resident association, and she was always very good at coming back to us and responding and actually giving us a bit of help when we needed help. But as for myself, a lot of people come to councillors as a sort of a conduit, if you want to say that, or just their voice, that they want to find out something from the council. And I know you said about everybody wants something done, but also people need to find out stuff. And very often, Dublin City Council, and I first of all want to say that I found their staff very, very helpful. But sometimes people, and particularly as we mentioned here about senior citizens, aren't so adept at jumping on the old computer as younger people are. And they haven't got maybe, you know, internet on their phone.
You're looking in his window.
But so in this age, an awful lot of services are dealt with through the internet, right? It's on the websites, and everybody tells you, go to the website and look at this, look at that. And sometimes one of the things you can just be is a point of connection and an easy point of contact for people who find it difficult to navigate all through the services.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
So.
Yes, and now with the promos has just come up, and so you can take a rest and get your breath back.
Yes, you've been and we through got, it all.
And then we're going to play a little piece of music.
Oh, that's lovely. Lovely.
Well, we got a little clap there, so that's nice. Now back to business. That's your brief.
Thank you so much. And it just brings back a little memory, if you don't mind saying so, of 1966, I think it was, not today, no, yesterday. But myself and...
The day before that.
We used to go to Mass in the Pro Cathedral, and it was the morning after Nelson's Pillar had been blown up. And I have some photographs at home of myself and my sister, and we're standing on these old kind of tar barrels, you know, painted red and white, to put it, and with the blown up Nelson's Pillar in the background, because it was the morning after the day it had been blown up. Yeah. So, and I'm there, my little hat and shoulder bag, all dressed for Mass on Sunday morning.
Well, that you should get that. We should get that in the window of some place, shouldn't we? Maybe have it. Sounds terrific.
Yes, and of course, Nelson, he was up there for quite a while, and they were quite a while collecting up the money to build them there, build the thing anyway. But however, that's beside the point. That's yesteryear. But now we're going to delve into the future.
Oh.
Now, Bus Connect. For our in our mind, it's going to serve us very well. But in other minds, lots of people, and it's not going to serve them at all. You know, quite a three bus routes are sort of going, but we're getting one that'll serve the entire community, you know, as such. And there's been lots of discussions at the bus link meetings, and apparently those that giving out about it never turned up to the meeting, so...
Oh.
Yeah, but it's the future, as we can see.
I think Bus Connect hopefully will be great for the city, and I hope it will improve our bus service. But I reckon just on, you mentioned, and some people are not too happy with it, and I think the main issue in this area would be the fact that the new route coming down Lorcan Avenue. And I've had some emails from local residents about that, and just reading one there when I, as I say, came home and grabbed a little bite to eat just before I came out again. And somebody mentioned to me that Lorcan Avenue has become a rat run between, we'll say, Beaumont and Coolock. And actually, I wouldn't say it's become a rat run. I would actually use a different term for it, and I'd say it has become one of the main roads.
Yeah, that's actually a better way.
It's not a rat run. It's where some people use a short run through an estate, a shortcut to get out to escape traffic. And yes, that's true, because people are using it to escape the traffic on Coolock Lane, I would imagine. But the thing is, it has become a de facto main road between Swords Road and Whitehall area, and particularly between the bridge and all the areas that lead over to all that lead off Oscar Traynor Road. And as I say again, I was thinking about this between on my way over here, and I grew up on Shintala Road, and when I lived there it was a, I know everybody always says this about where it was, a quiet residential road, but it was a residential road, and obviously it was busy along where we were on the block of shops, but it is nothing like the road it is now. And that's possibly due to Beaumont Hospital and the huge amount of traffic that that brings into the area, but also it's due to the way the M1 has been configured, and Shintala Bridge. So Shintala Bridge brings people who are coming out of the city and want to access all areas to the northeast of the M1. It's a route through it. Now, Margaret and myself have often talked about the terrible issues that surround the parking at Super Value
on
Larkin Avenue.
Yeah.
And Larkin Avenue has a shop and some small units beside it, but it is in essence a residential road that has now become, as I have alluded to, a main to me, a main business commuter thoroughfare. To add, well, some people might say, well, then therefore it's a prime use as a bus corridor. But the other aspect of that is, can the road that was built as a residential road, which in actual fact, do I sound as if I've been around for a long time? I remember my dear late uncle worked for McInerney, I think it was, because McInerney was a sign. He worked on houses in the area around Cromcastle in there, and I remember those being built. So before that, that was the end of that road, just there at the top of Larkin Avenue. So I know people say, oh, you're going back fado. But when houses were built at that time, that's the way they were built, and that was actually a cul-de-sac. And the road hasn't got any wider, but everybody now has more cars. And there's now more traffic. And as I say, there's the issue then with the parking. So I think having the bus travelling along that road is problematic.
Well, of course, we are looking at plans at the moment to alleviate the parking. However, it's an ongoing discussion as such.
Pardon?
It's an ongoing discussion as such. now, whether the thing will be reversed or not is another thing, but that's in the future, and the future's down the road. But nothing will happen till 2023, at least 2022.
Well, one thing I would say first, just to go to the first, to answer what you said first, and that is that, about nothing happening, and people seem to feel that their voice isn't listened to. And I would say that that is not always the case in my experience, and yours, Austin, as being a serial campaigner on lots of local issues, is that BusConnects has actually made changes. There have been changes made to BusConnects since its first iteration, since it first came out. And that is because people did make submissions. And I want to say to people who are listening to this that sometimes it does feel like, oh, what is the point of writing a letter or sending in an email? And a lot of people have mentioned about the BusConnects website, and several people who've written to me have said, I think I'm getting nowhere and I don't think it makes any difference. And I would say that it does, actually. They do listen. I'm not saying that it always happens that there's a change made, but it does happen.
It gives you the opportunity to try and get a change.
Yes. What I also found out over the years, I've been, and Margaret, I'm sure, will bear me out in this, is that over the years involved in my own resident association, which is a small area, we represent a small area, about 280 houses or so, is that we used to always write in and make a submission on planning various issues. And we would say we were representing the number of houses we were representing. But actually, the planning department only ever, as I'm sure you were, count that as one.
Yes.
And which, as I say, way back when, a long time since I found that out, discovered that. And people feel that, okay, if you're writing it on behalf of people, that you're making a case for those couple of hundred people. So what it actually takes is a couple of hundred people everywhere, in every resident association, to make their feelings known. And to write in their own words how they feel it will affect their lives. And if you ever see the kind of guidelines as to how you make a submission, and I actually feel that sometimes people use these templates that sometimes politicians kind of send out. And that's fine if people feel comfortable with that. But I also feel that people should put something in their own words and say, not the general terms that they've heard somebody else use, but just say in their own words how. And in this case, it's a bus route running up and down this particular road. How it would affect them, their lives, adversely.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And put it in your own words.
We had a meeting there last September 2018. And like that, we got all the residents of the area in. And we explained exactly what you've said, that we did have a kind of few ideas of what they, if they wanted to use to put in on their submissions, but also if they wanted to put in their own individual submission. Mm. And then we took all those in to town. I delivered them myself. Oh. And so, yes, we're kind of, we're of the on the side of inform everybody, mm. show them exactly, as you said, Patricia, that it's not just take what's written for you, mm. put in it in your own words, mm-hmm. and it does carry weight, mm-hmm. you know, so.
Actually, one resident, I presume, or he lives on Lorcan Avenue, who was in touch with me over the weekend, and I got back in touch with him and actually was asking him, did he have any alternative routes that he could propose, which he did. And he also mentioned that he had done a count. So he's doing Dublin City Council's work for them. He'd done a count of the number, the car count on Lorcan Avenue that day.
Yeah.
And it was actually quite surprising, the high count of traffic, like, yeah. was up in the high hundreds, yeah. but for the amount of hours he had done it at a particular time on the day. Going back to, just lost my train of thought there. Yes, Margaret, I do agree. That was a great idea. Sometimes people kind of think, oh, will I write this? And then if I send it, where do I send it to? That's an absolutely great idea for you to get people to submit their own, make their own submission, but then for you to bring all of those in and you as a resident association submit all those together. And it's actually a lot easier for people maybe to drop it into yourselves locally.
That's
And that's good. The thing about alternate routes, just on that particular gentleman who was in touch with me, that's also a good idea. So I'm always a believer in, and over the years, I'm referring back to our previous times again and going to different meetings. Some people like to go to meetings and always kind of, I don't know, I always kind of say they always naysayers, you know, like this is bad for our community and this is, and we don't want it. And that's understandable. But sometimes it's good maybe to have a look and say, well, can we see kind of any other options? And try and suggest. And then sometimes the planners and the people who are going to say, maybe we haven't considered that.
Yeah.
And I find sometimes that planners maybe aren't aware of very local issues. So what anybody who's got in touch with me, and as I say, Margaret is so well aware because she has been in touch with me about the parking issue at the supermarket. So, like, that's not something that, let's say, the planners, people who are designing homes, would realise.
Yeah.
So it's those little local issues that people, A, should make note of and state, but also if people could go to the trouble of looking and saying, well, maybe it would be better to take in Beaumont Hospital, but maybe take a different route to get to Beaumont Road rather than down this particular road.
Yeah, but then, of course, once you suggest an alternative to people in the area, they just suggest an alternative could mean.
Mm.
Yeah.
What happens with that is, of course, that the people who don't live on the road where the proposed bus route is running and the people nearest to it will be delighted.
Yes.
Because they'll have a bus right beside them.
Yes.
But
yes.
not running outside their front door.
Yes.
And that's the case with everything.
Yes.
So I think everything, you know, you mentioned there about things going forward and about planning and about Dublin City Council. Planning is just such a fraught issue, and it's very difficult because you're never going to, whoever said it, going to please all of the people all of the time.
Well, that's Lincoln said.
Lincoln, yeah. But and he was an American president. But you know, always there are some people going to be unhappy, and I think we always probably try and do, or what my idea for the future would be, is to try and get the best planning and the best way forward.
Yeah.
For the most people,
yes,
consensus.
That's
dirty word.
Hopping off of that now. Now, with regard to, there's a big issue coming up with the Lawrence land, right? Mm-hmm. And you were talking about increased capacity, density, etc., bigger footprints, etc. Now, we notice that of late. There's a the senior citizens' housing isn't mentioned at all in it. There's social housing and there's affordable housing, you know, and rental, affordable and purchase. And the O'Devany Garden proposal is now where they've altered the amount of, there's only about 20% of the, in total now, it will be in private ownership. Mm-hmm. But O'Devany Gardens is only 5.4 hectares, where Lonsland is 17 plus hectares, mm-hmm. which is the difference. But now, social housing is terrific. We need as many houses as we can get, but given, and they're going to go up instead of out, and that's going to cause lots of problems. And you can't put, you know, senior citizens up. We know about Ballymun.
Mm-hmm.
And you can't put them up on the third, fourth or fifth floor. Mobility is a big thing, so they have to go up to the first or second floor, you know. But it hasn't been mentioned recently at all. Now, this is a thing that's going to come, all planning is mm-hmm. going to, because you'll have a headache mm-hmm. again, you're finished. Planning with regard to the future now is going to be an enormous task.
Well, at the last consultation session I was at, held by Dublin City Council and local people, that was held about 2 months ago down in Parnell's Club in Coolock. I don't know if you were at that, Margaret.
Yeah.
Were you? Yeah. I certainly, the group I was with, your point about senior citizen housing was one I made, and I will most definitely be doing everything upmost in my power to see that there will be housing made available for older people. The whole idea of a mix, I think, is to have a mix of age groups as well as a mix of tenure and a mix of housing types. Mm. I don't think we've long enough here to talk about planning and everything. I think is wrong with the way Dublin City Council are going about the sites they own. And as you know, last Monday was very, very fraught. Mm-hmm. And the whole system whereby, and they're doing it again with Lawrence Lands, is where Dublin City Council are going to a private bidder to build. To me, that's the number one problem.
Yeah.
And that's what we're stuck with. And that's what happened with O'Devany. That's number one. So the way that they are approaching it, so we're coming to it now as I, you know, the old joke about, you know, how do I get to my destination? Well, I wouldn't start from here.
Yeah, yeah.
And that's what I feel about what they've done with O'Devany and with it. Right. So I do think there should be a mix of types. That's most important. So that older people are living in an area where they see younger people and middle-aged people and mm-hmm. families living mm-hmm. around them. Also, some of those people living there might be their own families
yeah.
or relatives. Also, and it's not just for this reason, but also I think I mentioned to you at the very outset when we talked about the campaign and going out knocking on doors, the amount of older people living on their own. And it actually struck me as quite sad. One particular morning, if you just allow me to deviate just for a minute, one particular morning, it was up around Chinon area, and I was going around dropping in leaflets, and it was morning time, and I was wheeling, actually I had my little granddaughter with me, and I was wheeling up and down, I was going in and out, and I met this lady. She was coming out of a house, and like, she's, no, I'm not the, and I realised she was a nurse calling in, and I dropped the leaflet in the door, and then a few roads, then I passed her again, and then I passed her on another road, and I said to her, because obviously it took me a couple of hours to get around to drop all the leaflets, but she says, oh yeah, and so she was calling in to people who were living on their own, and we just had a little chat about it, and she says, yeah, she says, and there are people who are on their own, and she says, I'm the only person I speak to today. And the thing I think about is that if you build and have purpose-built housing, is that people can have a smaller house where they've less maintenance, and there's all the kind of their needs are taken care of, and it's the type of house that suits them, as you say, with regards to mobility and everything else. And then also, if you build an area that it's built in such a way that you don't have a big, huge estate, but my idea would be, as I said to some of possibly your neighbours are on your committee who are talking about the entrance and exits.
Oh, yes, yes.
Yeah, that's an issue. Yeah. And I think the way it should be designed is that you build areas with, you know, a couple of roads with an entrance that only leads to a certain number of roads. And then that's all. And then you have another entrance, if you follow me.
Yes.
And so that when people live in smaller areas, the older people get to know the people who live around them.
Yeah.
The other thing is, and this sounds very practical or utilitarian, but it is also an issue, that there are a huge number of people that I've mentioned a couple of times living in 3 and 4 bedroom houses in the area. And they would only be too happy to move into a smaller purpose-built house. They would absolutely love to do it, but they can't do it most of the time because they can't find somewhere in their own area. And then there's also an issue which Roisin has highlighted a few times, and it was she actually who alerted me to this when we were out knocking on doors, is that under the Fair Deal scheme, that you're not allowed rent out your home. So we say there's an elderly person living alone and they have a family, but the family are all working and they can't physically take care of the person, but the person moves into a nursing home. They are precluded from renting out. And if they were able to rent their house, now some people might want to,
yes,
but if they, like, there's a huge amount of houses around our areas, not to mind all over Dublin, that are actually empty in the middle of a housing crisis.
Crying out for people to come and stay in them.
That brings me to Amalia. The Amalia is an organisation, and it's mixed up with where you could rent out half your house or a couple of rooms in your house, and you could get 14,000 free of tax. It was particularly designed for students, but it'd be extended to other categories of people. And a loan, which we were going to speak today, they have this type of scheme, which is the money is paid into the bank and into a loan account. They pay it to those, so nobody's stuck for rent or anything.
I think there's
a huge amount of schemes like that.
That people aren't aware of. And just one other thing, and it's not a scheme, but it's just something I noticed because I have a daughter in London and I go over to visit her frequently, and she lives in an old area with old houses, like small houses, old red brick houses, kind of like you see in nearer town here. But an awful lot of those houses are divided in two. And you'd live in an upstairs flat and downstairs. And we don't do that here. Yeah. And we should be some provision that people could do. I think I remember Brendan Courtney did a programme about his mum who lived on her own. And she had this house. Do you remember that programme? And they went around and looked at nursing homes.
Well, unfortunately, we could be discussing this for another 2 hours, but unfortunately, we've just run out of time. And Patricia, you're welcome anytime.
Oh, thanks very much, Austin. Thank you. Lovely to be here.
We cover all sorts of bits and pieces that we just discussed, you know, and we throw out ideas that people might think about, and they may come back to us. And
thank you very much.
On that note, I'll have to say goodbye.
Bye for now.
Your 24-hour community.